It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Tuesday morning, October 25th. I'm Steve Cole. Mail ballots from this year's election are starting to be returned, and as Benta Brookland reports for the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network, the first set of numbers show that Democrats have turned in more ballots than Republicans so far.
According to figures from the Colorado Secretary of State's office, about 12,000 more Democrats have returned ballots compared to Republicans. These are still early numbers, but in the coming days, these figures will outline early voting trends. This is the first presidential election in which every Colorado voter received a ballot in the mail. Counties sent out around 3 million ballots. People can still vote in person and at vote centers or drop off a ballot there. Figures show the overwhelming majority of voters choose to mail in a ballot. I'm Benta Brookland at the State Capitol.
Last Thursday, KDNK, the Carbondale Chamber, and the Soper Sun hosted a live broadcast forum for all three of Carbondale's mayoral candidates. The questions were submitted by members of the community and asked in front of a few dozen community members gathered at the 3rd Street Center. The entire broadcast is available unedited on our website at kdnk.org. News Director Gavin Dahl has more.
On the ever-important subject of affordable housing, the three mayoral candidates were asked this question by moderator Jim Green, who's director of community education at Colorado Mountain College.
Recruiting and retaining smart, skilled employees is increasingly challenging as housing gets less and less affordable. Would you tell us your plan for addressing Carbondale's acute shortage of affordable housing? And also let us know what are the implications of your response for the town's socioeconomic evolution.
Former trustee Ed Cortez answered first.
Well, housing is a subject that we've been debating now since the days that I was in planning and zoning, and we're going on to 15 years, and we still don't have an answer to it. We have no affordable housing. We have attainable housing. We have deed-restricted housing, but we really have never had affordable housing. Right now, we have no inventory to offer other than what's available now, and when people try to get into those homes, you know, we have a lottery that's with a 40 to 50 people waiting to hopefully move into some of the inventory homes that we have. I'm a renter, and and fortunately for me that just recently I will cease to be a renter at the end of this month. But you know, it's the recession wiped out a lot of people, and a lot of people are suffering, and a lot of people like myself cannot afford to get affordable housing. I had to go into the free market, and I was very lucky, but there's still a lot of people that are renting who would like to get into any type of ownership of a home. I know that Katrina has always been an advocate for housing, but getting back to the types of people who would be moving into this house, you know, we talked about, I read in the paper that one of the trustees was talking about critical employees. And yes, that's always been a subject for conversation about who is going to move into affordable housing when we have it. But a critical employee to me is the man who or woman who stacks the produce at City Market, the bus driver. Everyone in Carbondale, to me, is a critical person, and there shouldn't be any segregation on who gets the affordable housing when and if we get it. And once again, at some point in time, I do have a plan for affordable housing for Carbondale, but obviously I'm almost out of time and we'll do it a little bit later.
The next answer came from Mayor Pro Tem Dan Richardson.
Okay, tough question. So tough that this is another one that I don't really have all the answers for. But because of that, what I did was the board agreed that we needed to have a work session on affordable housing earlier this summer. This was some of the work that I was talking about. I really thought about who needed to be at the table to answer this question. So we had a work session with full planning and zoning. Guys like Bill Lamont, who have put a lot of energy into this topic, Garfield County Housing Authority, Habitat for Humanity, developers, they were all in the room. And it was one of the best discussions I've ever had about something as tough as affordable housing. And we came up with some tangible things. One, we said, let's not let this die. Let's keep talking about it. Tuesday night, there was a work session on rental housing guidelines. That was one of the priorities that we needed to address because rental housing was one of the things that we agreed just didn't exist. Secondly, we talked about a needs assessment. We saw a proposal for that needs assessment on Tuesday as well. partnering with the private sector. We have a developer at the table. With the adoption of the UDC, which I can take absolutely no credit for, I think we've seen a groundswell of interest in developing private sector affordable housing, which we've got a couple projects that are in the pipeline. Some of them are waiting for city market to develop. Some of them have been in the pipeline, like Thompson Park, that are now starting to happen. We saw Cooper Corner develop. And I think just with the changes in the UDC, we're seeing more ADUs being applied for, which to me is good affordable housing. So there's no chance that we would have seen a fundamental shift in the last 6 months of affordable housing. But I think as the market has increased with the adoption of the UDC, we are seeing a shift in viable, attainable housing that's coming to fruition. We're also likely going to create a small affordable housing fund with some reserves this year, which I think makes sense, not to spend it, but to just dedicate it to that. So I think we've taken some good steps, and those are my thoughts.
And current trustee Katrina Byers answered last.
I've heard that sentiment from both private businesses and public entities that are struggling to keep their valuable employees, school teachers, police officers, shoe salesmen, baristas, you know, just like Ed mentioned, these are community members and we're losing them. One I just saw the other day in the paper that out of our VRBOs, they had seen the only, that's the short-term rentals, that only three homes were displaced and turned into short-term rentals. But, you know, I think anywhere where we're losing vital community members, we're losing part of what Carbondale's strength is. We have a very small budget, half of Basalt's budget, and I think 5% of Aspen's budget. We run things on a shoestring, and we do it because of the volunteerism and community strength that has always defined Carbondale. You know, I feel like sometimes we do more on our little bit of money than much, much larger communities, and that's because of the buy-in and ownership of this community by the members of this community. And so I don't want to lose people to economic tension around the housing department. So anyway, specifically, my plan for affordable housing would be to take part of our capital fund reserve that we're transferring this year, combine it with the $50,000 that we have for our employee housing option, leverage that funding with money that Garfield County said that they would release to CHAFA to initiate an affordable housing project. A smart person told me there's no such thing as affordable housing, only subsidized housing, and I think that can be true. Eagle County did a project where they invested $2 million in an affordable housing project, and they made $10 million back, and every unit was filled, and I think we can do the same thing here. And whether or not we make $10 million on it, the implications of it are that we can retain the community residents that keep this community thriving. Thanks.
That was Katrina Byers, Dan Richardson, and Ed Cortez responding to a question about affordable housing in Carbondale at the Mayoral Candidates Forum held Thursday night at the 3rd Street Center. For KDNK, I'm Gavin Dahl.
Thank you, Gavin. Listen to the entire unedited 90-minute broadcast on our website, kdnk.org. We'll bring you one more clip tomorrow right here on the local newscast. Thanks again to the Carbondale Chamber of Commerce and the Soper Sun for partnering with us. Remember, it's not too late to register to vote. Get started at govotecolorado.com, which is managed by the Secretary of State, or get help at justvotecolorado.org, which is a nonpartisan election protection service. Now that the Bundy Group is finally on trial, momentum for seizing federal lands may be slowing down a bit, Eric Galatis explains.
County memberships in the American Lands Council, a national group working to transfer publicly owned lands to states, have dropped by as much as 45%, according to an investigation by the Western Values Project. Chris Sager with the project says drops in membership reflect the ALC's declining influence in Western states.
Things are not looking good for folks like the American Lands Council and the Bundy folks and others who are advocating for the transfer of federal public lands to states.
Sager refers to the group currently on trial for occupying the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. He also points to a recent report by the Conference of Western Attorneys General, which concluded that lawsuits to hand over federal lands to states are unlikely to succeed. According to its website, the ALC recently met at an undisclosed location in Salt Lake City to discuss strategies going forward. The group did not respond to requests for comment. Sager says the battle over who controls federal lands is far from over and notes out-of-state funders may still be able to keep the ALC's doors open. He says keeping national lands open and accessible for all Americans to hunt, fish, hike, and camp drives a multi-billion dollar recreation economy.
If you lose that because those lands are ultimately sold off to powerful special interests, then you lose a very significant chunk of the outdoor economy and, more importantly, our way of life.
Last year, the ALC removed a list of counties who pay annual dues from its website. The Western Values Project filed formal information requests to the 53 counties formerly listed and found almost half are no longer members. This is Eric Galatis reporting for KDNK.